Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, a new market will open on the border of Cambodia and Vietnam next year. Construction of the market began this week in Tabangkamom province. A Cambodia Commerce Ministry official said the Vietnamese government had given a grant of $2 million to build the new Dar Market. The official said the market will permit people from the Vietnamese side of the border to buy products from Cambodia more easily. If the market is a success, he said, similar markets would be opened in other areas along the border. The two countries have a long history of border dispute. Officials from the Vietnamese embassy could not be reached for comment. But the Vietnamese ambassador to Cambodia attended Tuesday's ceremony to begin building the market. He was reported as saying that the market celebrates the 50th anniversary of diplomatic relations between Vietnam and Cambodia. It will improve the lives of residents in Vietnam's Thai Ninh province and Tabangkamom in Cambodia, he said. The chief of the Dar community said the new market would bring business and money from many places, not only from Tabangkamom province. He said that it will also be used for trading agricultural products from Manokkari, Ratanakkari, and Krathi provinces. Trade between Cambodia and Vietnam has increased quickly over the past 5 years. It grew from $3 billion in 2016 to $3.5 billion in 2017. The Minister of Commerce was quoted on the Fresh News website as saying that the new market could help increase trade between Cambodia and Vietnam even more.
War can be deadly for wildlife, too. A new study reports that war is the biggest threat to Africa's elephants, rhinoceroses, and other animals. Researchers examined how years of conflict in Africa have affected populations of large animals. More than 70% of Africa's protected wildlife areas have been within a war zone at some point in the last 70 years. The more frequent the fighting, the greater the drop in animal populations, said Josh Daskin, an ecologist at Yale University. He was the lead author of the study, which was published Wednesday in the journal Nature. It takes very little conflict, as much as one conflict in about 20 years, for the average wildlife population to be declining, Daskin said. Areas with frequent fighting, but not necessarily the bloodiest fighting, lose 35% of their large animal populations during each year of war, he said. Some animals get killed by weapons of war. Yet many also die because of changes in social and economic conditions in an area as a result of war, said Rob Pringle. He is an ecologist at Princeton University and the study's co-author. People in and around war zones are poor and hungrier, so they may begin to illegally hunt animals for valuable tusks or hunt protected animals to eat, Pringle said. And during wartime, animal conservation programs do not have as much money or power to protect wildlife. Most of the time, wildlife populations do survive. Researchers have found only 6 examples of entire animal populations being destroyed by war. A large group of giraffes in a Uganda park, for example, died out between 1983 and 1995 during 2 civil wars. The new study examined the entire African continent over 65 years. The researchers looked at 10 different factors that could change population numbers. They included war, drought, animal size, protected areas, and human population density. The number of wars had the biggest effect on wildlife population. The intensity of the wars, measured in the number of human deaths, had the least effect on animals. Greg Carr is head of a nonprofit group that works in and around Gorongosa National Park in Mozambique. He said the study's findings are not surprising. He said Gorongosa's wildlife populations fell during the country's civil war. However, that was caused more by poverty than war, Carr said. With or without war, poverty is the threat to wildlife in Africa going forward, he said in an email to the Associated Press. Gorongosa is an example of how bad war is for wildlife. But it is also an example of how quickly wildlife populations can recover, researchers say. Mozambique's civil war ended in 1992. The war hurt its animal populations. Rebel and government soldiers hunted much of the wildlife in Gorongosa, Daskin said. Species came close to disappearing. But today, Daskin said, wildlife is back to 80% of pre-war levels. The effect of war on wildlife is bad, Pringle said, but it's not apocalyptic. I'm Susan Shand.
In this week's episode of Everyday Grammar, we're going to help you understand the difference between the simple past and the present perfect. English learners often confuse these two verb tenses. Let's start with an example. Can you tell the difference between these two sentences? Sentence 1. I saw the movie. Sentence 2. I have seen the movie.
Sentence 1 uses the simple past tense. Sentence 2 uses the present perfect tense. I saw the movie and I have seen the movie both refer to an action that was finished in the past. But there is one important difference. I saw the movie suggests that you saw the movie at a specific time in the past. I have seen the movie suggests that you saw the movie at an unknown time in the past.
Use the simple past to talk about a finished action that happened at a specific time. For example, I went out with my friends last night. The adverb last night is not required, but it does help clarify that the event happened at a specific time.
That's the easy part. Now let's talk about the present perfect. You form the present perfect by using have or has, followed by the past participle form of the verb. For example, I have graduated from college. The present perfect confuses English learners because it refers to a past action. It is also called present perfect because speakers use it to stress the importance of a past event in the present. The sentence, I have graduated from college, emphasizes the present effect of a past event, graduation. The exact time of the graduation is not important.
There are four more common situations that require the present perfect. First, it can express a repeated action. When an action happened more than one time in the past, use the present perfect. For example, I have seen the movie three times. Second, it is common to use the present perfect with the words for and since. For and since are adverbs that tell about the duration of an activity. They answer the question, how long? For example, I have studied English for a long time.
Third, the negative adverb never requires the present perfect. You can say, I have never been to France. You would not say, I did never go to France. Finally, when asking a question in the present perfect, use ever, as in, have you ever won the lottery? Listen for the present perfect question in this song by the American rock band Creedence Clearwater Revival.
In an informal situation, you can take out the word have in a present perfect question. Listen to actor Jack Nicholson playing the Joker in the 1989 movie Batman. Before the Joker takes his victims, he asks them an unusual question.
Tell me something, my friend. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Here's a tip. Pay close attention to adverbs. Adverbs give hints or clues about which verb tense you should use. Take a look at the reference list below.
A good way to practice the present perfect is to ask an English-speaking friend if he or she has ever done something. Have you ever flown in an airplane? Or have you ever seen the Grand Canyon? You could even ask something more profound, like, have you ever seen the rain coming down on a sunny day?
Welcome to The Making of a Nation. I'm Steve Ember. The national election of 1832 put Andrew Jackson in the White House for a second term as president. One of the major events of his second term was the fight against the Bank of the United States. In 1836, the bank's charter ended, and the Treasury Department took responsibility for most of the government's finances. Many people considered Jackson's bank veto one of the most important actions of his presidency. Another major event of Andrew Jackson's second term as president involved Texas. The United States had given its claim to Texas to Spain in 1819. Then Mexico won its independence from Spain in 1821. After that, Texas belonged to Mexico. During the 1820s, Americans poured into Texas. Most of the settlers came from the states of Tennessee, Mississippi, and Louisiana. Many owned slaves and brought the slaves with them to Texas. American settlers in Texas were able to buy land for almost nothing, but they had to promise to join the Roman Catholic Church. They also had to promise to obey the laws of Mexico. Over time, Mexican leaders saw the danger of continuing to permit Americans to settle in Texas. The Mexican government sent an official to inspect conditions along the border with the United States. The official reported that as he traveled north through Texas, he saw less and less that was Mexican and more that was American. He said there were very few Mexicans in some towns, and these Mexicans, he said, were extremely poor. He said the American settlers were not becoming true Mexicans. They were not speaking Spanish. They were not becoming Catholics, and they were not accepting Mexican traditions. The official said the situation in Texas could throw the whole Mexican nation into revolution. He urged Mexico to send troops to occupy Texas. The situation between the settlers and the Mexican government became increasingly tense. For the most part, there was little that President Andrew Jackson could do. The United States had a friendship treaty with Mexico. The government in Washington had a duty to remain neutral. In April 1833, the settlers in Texas held a convention. They prepared a list of appeals to the leader of Mexico, General Santa Anna. One of the Americans, Stephen Austin, carried the appeals to Mexico City. He spent 6 months negotiating with the Mexican government. General Santa Anna promised to honor all the requests except one. He would not make Texas a Mexican state, although he said that might be possible someday. Stephen Austin was satisfied. He left the Mexican capital to return to Texas. On his way home, to his surprise, Austin was arrested. He was arrested because of a letter he had written earlier. He had written it when his negotiations with Mexican officials seemed to be failing. He had said it might be best if the people declared Texas an independent state. Austin was put in prison in Mexico City for a year and a half. Stephen Austin urged the people of Texas to remain loyal to Mexico. But talk of rebellion had already begun. The settlers were calling themselves Texans. In November 1835, representatives from all parts of Texas held a convention to discuss the situation. They had no plans to take Texas out of the Mexican Republic. In fact, a proposal to do that was defeated by a large vote. However, the Texans took action to protect themselves against Santa Anna, who had declared himself dictator. They organized a temporary state government. They also organized a state army, and they made plans for another convention. Before the Texans could meet again, Santa Anna led an army of 7,000 men across the Rio Grande River into Texas. The first soldiers reached San Antonio on February 23rd. The Texas forces withdrew to an old Spanish mission church called the Alamo. On March 1st, the second Texas convention opened. This time, the representatives voted to declare Texas a free, independent, and sovereign republic. They wrote a constitution based on the Constitution of the United States. They created a government. David Burnett became president. Sam Houston was to continue as commander of Texas forces. On the second day of the convention, a letter came from the Alamo in San Antonio. The letter was addressed to the people of Texas and all Americans. The commander of Texas forces at the Alamo, Lieutenant Colonel William Barrett Travis, wrote, "I am besieged by 1,000 or more of the Mexicans under Santa Anna. I have sustained a continual bombardment and cannonade for 24 hours and have not lost a man. The enemy has demanded a surrender at discretion. Otherwise, the garrison are to be put to the sword if the fort is taken. I have answered the demand with a cannon shot, and our flag still waves proudly from the walls. I shall never surrender or retreat." The letter from the Alamo closed with the words, "Victory or death." Representatives at the convention wanted to leave immediately to go to the aid of the Texans at the Alamo. But Sam Houston told them it was their duty to remain and create a government for Texas. Houston would go there himself with a small force. The help came too late for the 189 men, perhaps even more, at the Alamo. The defenders included some Tejanos, or Hispanic Texans, and the famed frontiersman Davy Crockett. Santa Anna's forces captured the mission on March 6th. When the battle ended, not a single one of the defenders was still alive. Sam Houston ordered all Texas forces to withdraw to the northeast, away from the Mexican army. One group of Texans did not move fast enough. Santa Anna trapped them. He said the Texans would not be harmed if they surrendered. They did. 1 week later, they were marched to a field and shot. Only a few escaped to tell the story. Santa Anna then moved against Sam Houston. He was sure his large army could defeat the remaining Texas force. President Andrew Jackson and Sam Houston were close friends. When told of Houston's retreat, the president pointed to a map of Texas. He said, "If Sam Houston is worth anything, he will make his stand here." Jackson pointed to the mouth of the San Jacinto River. The Battle of San Jacinto began at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. There were about 800 Texans. There were twice as many Mexicans. The Mexicans did not expect the retreating Texans to turn and fight, but they did. Shouting, "Remember the Alamo," the Texans ran at the Mexican soldiers. 18 minutes later, the battle was over. Santa Anna's army was destroyed. On May 14, 1836, Texas President David Burnett and General Santa Anna signed a treaty. The treaty made Texas independent from Mexico. Historian Daniel Fellers says President Jackson had to be careful when responding to the situation in Texas.
Whether or not Jackson approved of the insurrection in Texas, whether or not he saw it as complicating or easing the path toward eventual assimilation of Texas, there's no doubt that he wanted Texas as part of the United States.
Jackson did not want Mexico to blame the United States for the revolution, even though the American government had been trying to buy Texas for many years. Jackson believed the country should spread as far west as it could. But he also worried that giving statehood to Texas would deepen the split between the northern and southern states. Texas would be a state where slavery was permitted. For this reason, the anti-slavery leaders in the North strongly opposed Texas statehood. Jackson told a representative from Texas, William Wharton, that there was a way that statehood for Texas would bring the North and South together instead of splitting them apart. Jackson said Texas should claim California. The fishing interests of the North and East, said Jackson, wanted a port on the Pacific coast. Offer it to them, the president said, and they will soon forget that Texas is a slave state. Jackson and Wharton held this discussion just 3 weeks before the end of the president's term. Wharton spent much time at the White House. He also worked with congressmen, urging the lawmakers to recognize Texas. He was able to get Congress to include in a bill a statement permitting the United States to send a minister to Texas. This bill was approved 4 days before the end of Jackson's term. On the afternoon of March 3, 1837, Jackson agreed to recognize the new republic led by his old friend, Sam Houston. 9 years would pass before Texas became an American state. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us next time for The Making of a Nation, American History, from VOA Learning English.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.